From Vox Markets, I'm Anita Riota. Welcome to Spotlight. Today, we look at a new generation of entrepreneurs focused on redefining women's health. It's the rise of the femtech sector. Market analysts Frost and Sullivan have forecast that the femtech sector will be worth $50 billion US dollars by 2025. In the last 3 years alone, the industry has received almost $1 billion in funding.
The women's health industry, particularly in regards to technology, hadn't seen innovation in decades. Today, the female leaders we spoke with, from the chief science officer of the world's most downloaded health app to the CEO of a company that could help save the NHS over £200 million a year, are seizing that lack in innovation as an opportunity to be first movers in their field.
So we asked them what it was like to be at the vanguard of this flourishing industry, balancing cutting-edge technologies with the need to strip the taboos that have historically stifled conversations about women's health issues.
Tanya Bowler is the CEO and co-founder of Elvi, named Venture Funded Business of the Year at last year's Startup Awards. A former humanitarian worker and researcher at UNESCO's HIV program, Tanya was shocked to find even she was missing essential knowledge about women's health. This prompted a deep dive into research that ended up in Elvi's creation and the truly market revolutionizing products it has launched.
I've always been excited and passionate about women's health issues. And very early on in my career, I think for me, what I thought I was best at doing would be to work on the research side and to work with governments and health systems to bring about better solutions for women. As I started working in that area, I became frustrated with how slowly things were happening. And at the same time, in my job around innovation, recognizing the potential for technology really to provide solutions at a much larger scale and much faster than working through governments. And then when I became pregnant, and then also during the postnatal phase, I was just completely shocked that there was a complete silence, that we don't talk about what happens to women's bodies. There's so much focus on the growing baby, and many different health issues are arising for women, which there's a lack of education, a lack of conversation, and a lack of technology and solutions.
One of the two products Elvi has on the market today is a pelvic floor trainer that helps reduce urinary incontinence, a condition affecting one in every three new mothers.
Tanya followed the success of the trainer with the world's first silent, wearable breast pump. Elvi's pump is such a leap of improvement from the traditional breast pump that the product sold out within 24 hours of its launch, and 10,000 people have joined the waiting list.
Bethany Edwards has been racking up entrepreneurship awards since she won the Wharton School's Social Innovator Startup title in 2015. Today, she is the creator, co-founder, and CEO of Lia, the world's first FDA-cleared, flushable, and biodegradable pregnancy test. Lia is discreet, sanitary, and drastically reduces environmental impact. Guided by the motto, women-led, nature-inspired, Bethany's product is set to fundamentally change single-use diagnostics for good. What we've noticed is that a lot of these products are utilitarian, but so they achieve their function, but because the consumer insight isn't there, they don't really cater to things like discretion. So what have you seen in your experience in the femtech sector is lacking?
You know, I think it's kind of what you pointed out, this lack of designing with empathy and the lack of kind of attention to that detail, right? I mean, I think, like you said, these objects having this utilitarian quality, I think is a really interesting point. And there's that, you know, products have just kind of existed in this space to function, but then it's missing some of the empathy or the unmet needs or the care around the design component. You know, I mean, one of the big things is obviously the sustainability piece, and that all single-use diagnostic tests, like at-home pregnancy tests, are made out of plastic and glass fibers and things that don't break down easily. You know, they're only used for a couple of minutes, but then everything that they're made out of far exceeds the life cycle of the product. So that was one of the big initial inspiration in terms of the overall product design for Lia. because it's a completely new way of handling these diagnostics, we essentially kind of started kind of from scratch and built everything up, right? So, you know, we knew that we needed it to be 100% biodegradable and be able to be water dispersible. And so what that does is that narrows the criteria, you know, that creates a very specific criteria set, and that narrows the materials that you can use right from the very beginning.
Dr. Anna Klepchikova is the chief scientist officer of Flow Health. Used by over 60 million women worldwide, Flow is an AI-driven period tracker and predictor app. As the medical mind guiding the most downloaded health app in the world, Dr. Klepchikova is working to inform and empower women's health practices.
I was a doctor in intensive care department, but in that place where I had to save lives every day, I could save up to like 6 people on a daily basis. But I felt that I wanted to do more. I wanted to help more people, but I had limited resources of my time and my scale. So after medicine, I went to a pharmaceutical company where I did marketing for new products. And my impact could potentially save hundreds and thousands of people in my country. But when Flow appeared on my way, it was a perfect match because Flow has millions of users worldwide. And it was that impact that I always wanted to have. You see, currently what we have around the world, that women don't have enough knowledge about their bodies. We had a survey among our users, and 40% of our users, and we have 28 million users now, they don't know what is ovulation. And it's amazing that women don't know the basic and the most important day of their cycle, the day where you're most likely to get pregnant. So what Flow gives women is knowledge that they can use in their lives, knowledge about their health, about their bodies, so they could get control of their lives.
Dr. Monica Saini is a leading radiologist focused on generating and delivering the highest quality breast cancer imaging to her patients. Her career has driven her across the globe, where she has cultivated a unique global perspective on emerging technologies. Dr. Saini was the medical director for GE Healthcare before she joined Volpara Solutions, where she now works to address all facets of breast healthcare. Her career philosophy is to address the breast and the woman as one integrated whole.
In my career, I was trained in the U.S., and as you mentioned, I have a fellowship, additional training in women's imaging. And I was in private practice for about 9 years. And during that time, I always was interested in new technologies because I'd see as patients came in, we always needed different strategies. You know, what worked for one patient may not have always worked for another patient. And we wanted to find those cancers earlier. So being able to find cancer at the smallest or earliest stage really makes a difference. And I think at the end of the day, my goal, and I think many colleagues would agree with me, is we want to give women options. So should you be in that boat of having to deal with breast cancer in your life path, it's a chapter in a very long book, but it's not the end of the story.
The term femtech was originally coined by Danish female entrepreneur Ida Tin. This new label, as a point of reference, reflects a departure from the traditional landscape of male-oriented product design. Yet, some are concerned the term is not clearly defined or alienates certain investors from taking an interest. But what do our guests think of this label?
It's an interesting question. I mean, when I started 5 years ago, there was no terminology for it. So for us as a company, it is definitely useful having a term that we can rally around with others, because there's other important players, you know, in Europe and the US who we see very much as part of the network. Obviously, with any new terminology, there's always some confusion. You know, does it include femcare? For example, menstruation pads, that's not really technology. You know, there's important material innovation happening there. Some people think femtech could be about women working in tech. But overall, I think if we can narrow it down to technology that's specifically for women's health and issues to do with womanhood, then I think that's quite a nice definition. So that would exclude things, for example, you know, a hairdryer. If it's a hairdryer specifically for women, would that also count under femtech? But it's a very nascent field. Like 3 years ago, this term didn't exist. So I'm generally very positive about it. And I think we can keep working around what it means and, more importantly, make the case to investors of why this is an exciting industry trend that they need to be part of.
You know, I mean, I think that in order for things and movements to really take hold, they require a name, right? It's kind of like, it's just the idea of branding, right? You need to be able to quickly name something that you're doing, right? Or, you know, giving products a brand, or, you know, a way for people to quickly kind of talk about it and wrap their head around it. So, I mean, I think that, you know, it's kind of had to have a name to take hold. But, you know, I think that it is really about innovation for all people. This is a new field based on a lot of new things leading up to it, including, as I mentioned, more, you know, more women becoming entrepreneurs, which allows them to design and kind of tap into these unmet areas that are in desperate need of innovation because they haven't been designed from a human lens or a human standpoint or from a, you know, human-centric design perspective.
I'm interested in your take on the word femtech itself. Do you think it's an accurate label, a misnomer? Does it limit the field at all? What is your take?
I don't find it limiting. I think let's put it out there. Let's not be shy of the word femme or feminist or, you know, female. These are issues that are near and dear to my heart. And so, you know, the label itself is not as important to me, but I think that as women being leaders in the health tech sector, I think it's important for us to feel comfortable to talk about these type of things and come up with innovative solutions.
We came to see the femtech sector as being defined by the lack of real innovation women's healthcare has seen in the past several decades.
In some cases, it seemed the root of this stagnation varied from insufficient consumer knowledge to deficient investor interest in researching women's health issues. Today, our female entrepreneurs are insisting that those trends be a thing of the past.
So when I was pregnant, I'd never even heard of my pelvic floor. And then I was in a Pilates class and my instructor said to me, the most important thing you need to do as a woman is look after your pelvic floor. And as somebody who, you know, I considered myself to be an expert in sexual reproductive health and a researcher, I was quite shocked that I didn't know about this issue. So the more I delved into it, the more I read about it. I kind of immersed myself in all the scientific literature. So all the clinical trials, I reached out to all the academics here in the UK and in Europe who were working on the issue, trying to understand really why was it that this women's health issue that was largely preventable and treatment through simple exercise wasn't happening? Why was there not more uptake? The more I spoke to researchers and practitioners in the field, I realized the issue was really twofold. One, that women didn't know what to do or didn't know how to exercise. And second, they had no tools to help them. When we started LV 5 years ago, I don't think I quite realized how difficult it would be, because not only were we innovating in terms of a new technology, but as with anything that's highly innovative, you're also creating a new product category, which means having to change the conversation as well. But I think if you want adoption of any new tech into society, you have to really focus on both. So both the actual technological solution and second, changing the way we think about these issues. So particularly for women's health, which is such a taboo area in society, you know, historically we've always struggled to talk about women's issues, anything that makes us women, be it menstruation, fertility, postnatal, menopause. So often these issues are also shrouded in quite a lot of negativity. So our first product, which is a pelvic floor trainer, you say pelvic floor health, either nobody knows what it is, or they have a lot of negative connotations, be it prolapse issues, bladder incontinence. So for us at LV, it was about shifting it into a lifestyle issue, which is what it should be, because it's a normal part of womanhood and women's wellness. So changing the conversation from bladder problems to inner strength, core strength, and that was very much part of our strategy from the beginning. So even our go-to market, instead of launching through a hospital route, we very much launched through boutique gyms, launching with Gwyneth Paltrow on Goop, and getting it very much more into the lifestyle wellness sector.
I could see that there is a demand for pharmaceutical remedies, for products aimed to solve particularly female problems. Because as a marketer, by my second background, I could see that women and their needs were underserved for decades. Because the market was focused mainly on men. All the marketing researches were done on men. All the pharmaceutical products were created by men. So I could see that women were really underserved.
When I visited China, I thought it was interesting. I went to a small city in southern China, and that particular hospital performed 1,000 ultrasound exams a day, so 1,000 patients, of which 300 were women having breast ultrasounds. I can tell you in my days of private practice in the States, and even in New Zealand, when we have a very full clinic, we would never see 300 patients in one day at one site. That's a large number of patients to see. So those physicians in China were extremely overwhelmed and were desperate for solutions to automate how ultrasound was performed. So that was just one example of a different screening approach than what's used commonly in the West.
What we've noticed is that a lot of these products are utilitarian, but so they achieve their function, but because the consumer insight isn't there, they don't really cater to things like discretion. What have you seen in your experience in the femtech sector is lacking? What do you think is really going to drive the femtech sector forward?
You know, I think it's kind of what you pointed out, this lack of designing with empathy and the lack of kind of attention to that detail, right? I mean, I think, like you said, these objects having this utilitarian quality, I think is a really interesting point. And there's that, you know, products have just kind of existed in this space to function, but then it's missing some of the empathy or the unmet needs or the care around the design component. And so, you know, I mean, I think the biggest thing is that it's about more women becoming engineers and scientists and designers and entrepreneurs and business leaders. You know, it's not so much necessarily that maybe the space is lacking, but it's new. You know, this is, we're finally kind of at a point in history where, you know, a lot of women are now, you know, in the workforce, being able to be engineers and scientists and hold these jobs where you're actually able to have the skills and to design products that aren't meeting our needs. And so I think that's kind of what we're seeing. It's a new era, and we're able to, the more that we're able to get women designing and solving these problems for themselves, and the more we're going to kind of change.
You know, we had a conversation at Volpara not too long ago talking about breast MRI and the experience that women go through. And I remember being at this meeting, and it was predominantly a meeting with, you know, a lot of my male colleagues, and they were saying, oh, you know, I wonder why not as many women who are eligible for breast MRI are getting this test when it has shown that it's a very sensitive test to finding breast cancer. And I said, well, as the one woman in the room who's actually experienced a breast MRI, you might find that this test is not so easy to tolerate. It's a test that's very claustrophobic inducing. It's invasive. It requires an injection of a dye in the vein. And while you're undergoing this 30 to 40 minute test in a very uncomfortable position in an uncomfortable space, all that goes through your mind is, do I have cancer or do I not? So when you think about all these different factors, I think as a woman, you know, I can bring to the table a conversation that some of my colleagues have not had the ability to experience. So I don't think we need to hide. I think we can say it outright and be much more comfortable about having these discussions. And that's how innovation is going to happen, is sharing these experiences and, you know, and bringing to the forefront the woman's voice.
So we began to wonder, what are their strategies for overcoming stigma and striking interest in otherwise skeptical investors?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, for us too, in general, we're starting with the pregnancy test first, but our technology is broader than pregnancy tests. So I think in areas where maybe I've dealt with certain investors or in certain scenarios, I have always spoken about this as the technology first, right? It's the technology in what we're doing on the innovation side and what we've done on the product design side and, you know, what we've created has allowed it to be a, you know, pregnancy test, which is specifically geared towards women. But the technology is much broader than just pregnancy tests, right? I mean, so what we've done is, you know, we've completely eliminated any plastic from single-use diagnostics. So this could be applicable to not only pregnancy tests, but it could be applicable to urinary tract infections. It could be applicable to infectious disease tests. So it's a lot broader what we're doing than just only women's health or only pregnancy tests. On the technology piece. So from an innovation standpoint, I've talked a lot about that as well, because that's a big piece of this. I mean, it's not just pregnancy tests, but it's also eliminating plastic from all single-use diagnostics and finding a completely new way to manufacture and mass produce them.
One of the common things I will tell you is that there is a deficit or a dearth of breast radiologists like myself. Every place I go, that seems to be a common theme. So this is where technology is really helping to aid the next step of helping the physicians that we have by supporting them, helping us be more efficient, helping with the increased workload.
I mean, you're absolutely right. As in, male investors can understand women's health issues, but they're not going to understand them from a personal point of view. However, I do think with VCs and VC partners, ultimately you shouldn't be having to make your business case based on personal experiences. If that's what's happening, then that probably isn't a serious VC you'd want to talk to. Clearly, it needs to be based on numbers, and that's very much what we used. You know, pelvic floor health is very clearly an issue that affects 1 in 3 women. 1 in 10 women will need to have an operation at certain points in their life, and there's clear interventions that have been shown to work in an evidence-based way. So for us, it was very much to take the personal out of it and very much to present the facts and the statistics. That said, though, we have to also remember, you know, with this whole surge that's happening in femtech, men are a very important part of it too. We have to bring them along. And specifically with pelvic floor health, in fact, often when we talk to male partners at VCs, they will have wives and they will have children. So in fact, they do know. So when we launched LV Trainer, we wanted to change the conversation. So we didn't focus so much on a traditional go-to-market strategy for medical devices. We very much focused on winning over the hearts and minds of consumers. So that's the way we launched it. We launched it as a lifestyle product. However, we also knew that this is required delicate and intimate conversations with women so that the health professionals were going to be absolutely critical to this. So the second part of our go-to-market strategy was really to bring on board health evangelists and health ambassadors. And that took off much faster, to be honest, than we predicted. We ended up recruiting over 1,000 health professionals into our network because, frankly, they were just so excited to have a product that really helped them and what they were doing for women's health.
Women's health is stigmatized. A lot of topics around women's health are stigma. I think it's everywhere in Europe, in America. You just can't go out in the street and talk about tampon. People would feel embarrassed. So we see that there is a demand on the market for discussions on these topics. About bodies, about menstruation, about infertility, about fertility, about marriages, about libido. So FLO provides this place where women can discuss these topics and be anonymized. So nobody will know who are they, but they will have chance to speak out about their problems. So what we do in FLO, we provide a possibility to talk about everything that was kept in silence before.
You know, it's easy when you are a specialist of a particular area, as I am, to get so focused in just zoning in whether or not there's cancer or not in this breast, that we can sometimes lose sight of all the patient's anxieties. You know, a lot of patients come to me just seeking for clarity on issues like pain, breast pain in particular, and they're worried that it's breast cancer. And more often than not, it's not cancer, but it's looking at what else is going on for that woman. There could be high levels of stress. There could be injuries to her underlying pectoralis muscle. There could be back issues. There could be cardiac or heart issues going on. So you need to step back a little bit and be able to look at the patient and, you know, talk with them as to what are all the other things that are kind of coming in. And pain is a very complex thing, and it's just one of many issues that women talk about. We have to keep bringing these concerns to the forefront. You know, the issue of compression in a mammogram, you know, I think some of us just take it for granted. That's just part of the test. It's quite uncomfortable. I have yet to hear a patient say, I can't wait to have my mammogram today. So if there are ways that we can relay that level of discomfort and what can we do to improve that experience, or is there a test where it doesn't require compression, you know, that's great. Let's keep having those conversations. Let's keep thinking about new technology.
There's a societal change happening, you know, in the midst of a big feminist surge. And so issues that were taboo even 3 years ago are all being, you know, changed and then being brought out into the open. And that's really helped us, both has helped us. And I think we're also part of that, that movement. And that's what has created a special moment in time right now, really, for femtech.
So it actually seems that this lack of innovation presents a massive opportunity for these entrepreneurs to revolutionize their products and sectors, and for investors to participate in huge revenues and growth potential.
So your second product is a breast pump that is the first cordless, hands-free, and silent pump. It's sold out within 24 hours of its launch, and now 10,000 people have joined the waiting list. So it's clearly massively popular and has addressed a lack in the market. But what struck me most about the pump is that it seems that it would allow women to go to return to, you know, normal life or their normal day, because they can now pump without having to seek privacy, without having to interrupt whatever activities they have going on. How central was this return to normalcy to your mission in creating the pump?
It was absolutely essential. We're a mission-driven company. So for us, we wouldn't develop a product unless it was towards our goal, which is around giving women control and confidence in their daily lives. So for us, you're absolutely right. The pump is a really important product to allow women to be the mother they want to be and the woman they want to be. But also the pump, it was just crying out for innovation. Like, we have completely and radically turned it on its head and come up with something which women don't even recognize to be a pump. And that's because really breast pump epitomizes everything that's bad about women's tech. It's a horrible product, the architecture. It's noisy, cumbersome, painful, difficult to use. And that can have a very emotional impact on women. You know, more than 80% of women stop breastfeeding before they want to. So it really is a critical product for new mums. It was desperately in need of innovation. And again, because it's kind of a neglected issue that nobody thinks is interesting or sexy, had been neglected for a long time. But that said, it's been very exciting because, again, actually, when you redesign something that's, there's been such a latent demand, the takeoff can be really fast. And you're absolutely right. It's taken off. You know, it's almost not that it's taken us by surprise, because we've been working on this product for 3 years. So we believe in it. But it's clearly much an easier message, you know, because there's less education than there is with the pelvic floor trainer. With the breast pump, you just need to say, look, guys, you can put this in your bra, let go, and it does it for you.
Does working specifically in a women's health product create problems on the investing side? I mean, I think is kind of the question there. And no, I mean, why should it? I mean, I think people are finally wrapping their heads around the fact that women account for 50% of the population, and they are often purchasing many products. and they're influencing the purchasing behaviors in the household in many different ways. And so why should that be seen as a negative that you're designing specifically for a certain person or a certain unmet need?
Flo was the first cycle checker with artificial intelligence in the market. And why do we need artificial intelligence? To improve cycle prediction. Because you know that there are two types of cycles, regular cycles and irregular cycles. And if you have regular cycles, it's easy to predict the next day of your menstruation. You just count 28 days, for example. But if you are irregular, it's very hard to predict when will your next period arrive. So artificial intelligence processes a huge amounts of data and reveals certain correlations that help to improve cycle predictions by two times for irregular cycles. Without artificial intelligence, we couldn't process huge amounts of data and make this accurate predictions. When you have a better prediction of your next menstruation, you can plan your life around this day more carefully. When you know that you're having a period in 2 days and you're sure about it, you can go to swimming pool today. You can become more confident of yourself, of your life.
So in other interviews, we've been looking specifically at consumer products which are emerging within this femtech boom, coming to the forefront of technology. You know, although arguably breast cancer screening hasn't been overlooked in some places, you know, the value of what a screening or a mammogram offers to a woman is so critical and furthering, like you said, this earlier detection and eventual prevention. You know, there's been development since its introduction, more places than others, but obviously still so much room for innovation to avoid overdiagnosis or false positives and negatives. You know, how have you seen, or how do you view the advancement in the quality of this screening? And what does Volpara specifically offer to distinguish this development?
So we have our software now in 36 countries. As you mentioned, we've actually scanned up to 2 million women so far, which is amazing. And so the data from these images, these 2 million women, is in our cloud. So we are able to look at this information and really kind of figure out different patterns and trends. So some of the things that we've been doing, as I mentioned earlier, was quantifying density. Initially, when people used to look at density, and particularly in the States, we have a whole visual way of assessing it. So someone like myself will look at a mammogram and give it a grade. And the only issue with that is, the next colleague down might look at that same mammogram and give it a different grade. So there's some level of subjectivity to it. And the eye itself cannot quantify in numbers. You know, we can give it a vague category. So what Volpara does, it goes in and it does volumetric, meaning it can take this volume and think of it in a 3D sense, where my eye on two images can only look at it from a 2D sense. So we're able to quantify the percentage of the fibroglandular tissue, or that dense tissue I keep talking about, and how much each woman has. And then that plays a role into being able to put that number into risk models to kind of determine where a woman might be in the low or average or high risk categories, and whether or not then she needs additional testing. So we want to reduce the number of times a woman has to come back for something as small as inadequate imaging. And so we do that a couple different ways. One is through a product we have called Enterprise. And what that does is it gives metrics on every mammogram image that's taken, stored in our cloud, and the technologists, as well as the radiologists, can log in and look at the performance of each technologist as they're going along on each image as they're going along. And this has helped. We've noticed sites all over the world who are using Enterprise noting an improvement in the quality of the imaging that they're performing. And so we find every site actually bumps up as they start using the software. And it's a great motivator for sites to look at their images and review them together and see how each individual is doing and being able to take the exams and if there's any deficit. So that's where if technology can come in, and that's one of the things we do at Volpara, is to try to quantify how much fibroglandular fibrous tissue is in a woman's breast. So we can then figure out what is her risk of developing breast cancer in the future. So if we don't see breast cancer today on the mammogram or ultrasound, whatever exam she's having in whatever country she's in, that's fantastic. But the next ultimate goal is prevention. So if we can look at factors that we can see on imaging and take from that and sort of get a sense of maybe what the woman's internal chemistry is, we might be able to then go from there to come up with preventative strategies, which is the ultimate goal. How do we prevent breast cancer?
But how exactly are these nascent products and services measuring their success?
For Monica, it's about creating a uniformity in breast imaging that has previously been missing.
So having a mammogram in New Zealand may not be similar to the mammogram experience you might have in the UK or another woman might have in the US. And that means it's dependent on how the site where you go to and the technologist who performs the exam positions you in the actual mammogram machine. And we want to make sure that we're looking at the same type of imaging no matter where you are in the world. So we've established a whole set of quality metrics looking at how much the breast is compressed or squeezed in a mammogram, because we have found research showing us that there is an ideal level of amount of compression. If you compress too much, not only is the exam more painful than it's needed, but it actually can inhibit your ability to find breast cancer. And if it doesn't have enough compression, that also inhibits our ability as radiologists to actually look at those images and clearly detect breast cancer. So looking at quality metrics is a huge issue and something that we want to make sure is, again, coming back to the uniformity, so that the test you get, no matter where you are in the world, should have the best possible imaging and that the physicians interpreting it have the best possibility of picking up any early signs of breast cancer. You know, and ultimately, I think down the road, when we have a lot more data looking at risk models who then are able to stratify or divide women into a low, moderate, or high-risk category, some women may need less screening. You know, and that means maybe you need to go in every 3 to 5 years and get a particular type of screening exam, whereas some women who are going to be at higher risk maybe need to get screened more frequently in every year. So this is, like I said, it's such an exciting time, and we're just on that cliff of change. And so there's so much coming in the future that I think is going to make this experience more enhanced for women and give them more information that hopefully will be able to help them make more informed decisions. It's looking at different populations and seeing what's going to be the best thing for those particular group of women with these particular factors. So it's individualizing it, but I think it can also be done from a public health approach as well.
Anna underlines Flo's ability to help women gain fundamental knowledge.
What is important about Flo is Flo helps women to understand themselves better and to realize that their bodies and their minds are connected with their health. And our founders really pay a lot of attention to the product, and they always check all the reviews by the users in the App Store, and we are always trying to improve Flo based on the women reviews. And a lot of new things that we introduced to Flo were based on suggestions and ideas from our users, like our postpartum mode for women who had baby recently. It was an idea from our users. So we're in a tight connections with women who use Flo.
Tanya built upon an existing yet wholly unsatisfactory technology to restore a sense of normalcy to new moms' lives.
So this is the technology that's been shown to be most effective. It's pretty simple. Basically, traditionally, women would go to a hospital, lie on her back, and they'd insert a probe and some electrodes, and then you'd see your pelvic floor motion on a computer. It's a simple idea, but the technology was horrible and it was very difficult for women to use. So really what we did at LV in terms of innovation was take what existed in the hospital, the horrible device, and turn it into something that women would actually want to use at home. And I think the second key innovation for us was really recognizing that even though the technology existed in hospitals, it wasn't actually very good. And I think this is the problem with women's health tech, is that there's not been any innovation for ages. So all the products are really, you know, fairly rudimentary. Although that in and of itself, on the flip side, is a very exciting opportunity for innovators. Funnily enough, what we weren't expecting was that adoption through the health system was actually very fast. And that goes against what our stereotypes are, particularly about the NHS. So I'm part of the, you know, the health tech ecosystem here in the UK. And many startups are moving to the US because their sense is that it's impossible to get innovation into the NHS. But our experience shows that if you have a product that delivers really improved results for health professionals, that they will be your evangelists. And that's very much how we got it into the NHS. And now we have a partnership where women can get an LV trainer through the NHS at no cost to themselves.
Bethany argued the essential change in nature of taking a pregnancy test proves Leah's concept.
We spoke with hundreds of women, one-on-one interviews, surveys, and really dug into some of the other unmet needs around pregnancy tests. And clearly one of them is around privacy. You know, it's an object that elicits a lot of conversation and, you know, people are often hiding these in trash cans. And so what could we do from the sustainability side? So, you know, advancements in material science, what could we do from that piece and from the engineering components? But what also could we do to allow and create a more private pregnancy test and pregnancy testing experience? Because we know there's frictions around purchasing. Someone want to walk into a supermarket and have to purchase pregnancy tests. We know that one of the biggest other things when people purchase pregnancy tests is magazines to kind of cover them up. So we know there's the issues around purchasing, and then there's also issues around the actual disposal. So the overlaying of privacy with sustainability is what really drove the innovation and the product design from the beginning. And knowing that there were some, antiquated brands in this category. You know, nothing's been done on the form factor in over 30 years. So what could we do differently? And how could we create not only an innovative technology and an innovative product, but also a brand for pregnancy tests for today's woman? This is great. I am able to carry this with me in my wallet and I can test wherever. So there's an inherent empowerment in that, in this ability to feel like you can take control of your health and your testing, and you don't have to feel embarrassed about taking these tests. And you can take them, if you're at work, or the other big thing that we've heard is, there's women that are struggling to get pregnant, right? So they're going through lots and lots of pregnancy tests. And the reminder of having to see those pregnancy tests pile up in the trash can is a very emotional and upsetting experience for a lot of women.
Essentially, success for these female entrepreneurs seems to lie in their validation of the female consumer's needs and recognition of the immense power the female consumer actually holds.
So the female consumer of technology has been completely neglected. And it's a massive opportunity, an opportunity obviously both financially in terms of commercial success and opportunity, but also for having a real impact. So when I say that the female consumer has been neglected, up till now, often if you say consumer electronics and you say women, it's nothing you think about in terms of it being innovative. Often the change will be at an aesthetic level, such as changing the color or turning something into a piece of jewelry. So really what's been overlooked is the fact that women are early and avid adopters of technology. So they offer a huge potential for best designed products.
So what does this femtech revolution hold looking forward? And what do these inspiring female leaders of the industry see for this fast-growing market and future opportunities?
Well, first, we get in contacts. We're growing really quickly, so we want more and more people to join us on our mission. But second, yeah, it's a big, white, open space out there. You know, we're very much focusing on the postnatal period to begin with. There are other areas of womanhood which have been completely neglected as well. There's obviously interest in the fertility area, but I would say anything from menstruation through the postnatal and menopause, there's so many issues that need to be tackled and can be improved through better technology.
It is first and foremost making sure that we're mass producing these and getting these into as many hands of women as we can, right? I mean, I think that's really the first initial really big goal for us, starting with the US. And then, you know, we've gotten a lot of interest from Europe. And so that's probably one of our other big areas that we're looking into, finding ways to tackle that as well. You know, the ban of single-use plastic in Europe has created a lot of interest in the product. And so I think that's one of the other big areas for us to move into. We're changing pregnancy testing for good, right? I mean, for the planet, it's better for women everywhere. You know, there's a dedication to trying to facilitate compassion around factual dialogue around pregnancy and pregnancy testing. This idea that we're reducing some of the frictions around the purchasing and the disposal. And the idea that we're making sure that it's a 100% biodegradable test. You know, those are things that make it better from a consumer's use perspective, but then they also make it better for the planet. And I'm really passionate about moving into that kind of product design in general. You know, there's so much problems with plastic waste. And this idea that we should be designing products not to, you know, necessarily make them recyclable, but make them designed in such a way that they can just automatically go back into nature. So that was one of the biggest other inspirations for us, is to design with sustainable, all natural materials, so that from the very beginning you're creating a product that is designed to live for the use case.
What do you think needs to happen in the future of femtech to keep this societal change going and to really bolster the conversation that has taken off?
I think there's different ways to keep changing the conversation. For us, what we're doing at LV is using technology. Fundamentally, technology has the potential to change the way women think about their bodies and think about their health.
I think there are multiple factors needed for this growth. Women shouldn't be afraid to talk about their problems in public. If they need a better tampon, they should post on Twitter. If they need a better, cycle tracker, they should speak out loud. It's the first factor, that we should talk about their problems. We should ask companies, please make something to improve our lives. And the second factor, I think there should be more women in tech industry, because when you're a man marketer, it's really hard to understand what women need. So I think that if more women will come to managing positions to tech industry, the more products targeted on women we will have.
There's so many different avenues of approaching breast health. And so I think, you know, when you talk about femtech, you know, it's kind of interesting looking at services and products that help enhance women's health and women's well-being is it's not just about offering more testing. It's maybe about offering the right combination of tests that are appropriate for that individual. So it's looking at maybe a somewhat individual biologic approach, if you will. Many parts of the world do not have access to mammography. Some places have access to ultrasound. Some places don't have access to that and are in small, rural, remote areas. So how do we bring that type of level of care that we provide in some parts of the world to these other parts that have less access? And so that's something I feel very strongly about, is thinking about how we get this to be more equitable for women across socioeconomic statuses, across different communities where going to your local health center is not easy to do and you're raising a family or working? How does that work into it? So I think we need to take maybe more of a communal approach looking at medicine rather than we build this center, you come to us. How do we go back into the community and bring health and well-being there? I think that's another thing we really need to take into consideration.
Not only just sort of this femtech space, as people call it, but I mean, we're also going to change financing in general and the startup community in general. And we're going to shift the flow of money because more women need to be in those positions and running businesses to be able to start creating social economic change also. So I think this is just kind of the start of a whole new way that we design products, that products get engineered, and that money flows back into society, and we're able to reallocate it and invest it into problems that we truly believe need to be solved.
Thanks for tuning in to our second episode of Spotlight. We'd like to thank our incredible and inspirational guests for taking the time to share their insight with us. So thank you to Tanya Bowler, Bethany Edwards, Monica Saini, and Anna Klepchikova. Join us next time when we'll be investigating the new role AI is taking in the medical technology sector. AI has been portrayed as both a saving grace and apocalyptic. And when health and medical advancements are added to the picture, the stakes get even higher. Tune in as we talk to scientists and entrepreneurs navigating the waters with AI and medtech.